Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on The Fan of History, Episode 10. Last time on The Fan of History, it was the 920s BC. We talked about what was going on in Assyria, the Battle of Bitter Lakes, Shawshank attacked Canaan, and King Mu of the Cho Dynasty passed away. Joining me, as with every week, is Dan, the Fan of History. Say hello, Dan.
Hello. Ready for some history? This is a great episode we have ahead of us.
Yeah, it seems to be all about the Assyrians.
Yes, and I have to say something about that, because when we started this podcast, I was thinking of... Fan of History is quite a general name, but I like it because then we can change topics, etc. in the future. But the other option was to call it the Neo-Assyrian Empire Podcast, because... the Assyrians will take over this podcast starting with this episode.
Why do they call it the Neo-Assyrian Empire?
It could also be called the Third Assyrian Empire, but that is kind of... the two earlier empires were not very impressive. There was a First Assyrian Empire that was mostly like an extended trading network. And then there was the Middle Assyrian Empire, which was an empire in a sense, at least for its time. But that empire is gone, and the Assyrians will be very focused on retaking the Middle Assyrian Empire, because it went away in the 11th century, destroyed by the Arameans. And so the Assyrians remember this, because they already have 1,000 years of history, even more at this point. So they have been around forever. But they want their Middle Assyrian Empire back. And this will eventually become much larger than the Middle Assyrian Empire, and thus the Neo-Assyrian Empire.
I gotcha.
So let's talk about a totally different civilization. But they are important, because they will eventually destroy the Neo-Assyrian Empire.
Oh, wow.
In the year 612 BC. So we have 300 years of Assyrians ahead of us. And I think it will be at least 50 episodes about the Assyrians. So, but first I want to mention the Chaldeans, because they appear at around this time. It's unclear if they are Arameans, but they sort of share similar tribe names as Arameans. They have, their tribes are called Bit, Yakin. Everything begins with Bit, just like the Arameans. But their origin is unclear, at least to me. But they appear and they invade Babylonia, like everybody else. but they settled down, unlike the Arameans, and they settled down in the southern swamps of Babylonia, just by the Persian Gulf. The land elevation has changed since 3,000 years ago, so it's not entirely easy to map on a map the Chaldeans were located. But they are by the Persian Gulf in the swamps, and the Babylonians sort of have left these swamps alone because they were swamps. But this is called the Sea Land, which sounds kind of like an ancient amusement park.
Right, it, they could go there to see dolphins and stuff.
Yeah, I bet they could. But there are several tribes of Chaldeans, and they are moving in sort of under the radar now, taking over these swamps and building tribal centers. And we'll hear from them again after the fall of the Babylonian Empire, which is in the 6th century BC, which is actually the Chaldean Empire, which is sort of gives you a hint about their importance. The word Chaldean will come to mean witchcraft, pretty much, mysterious. And it's used in the Bible as a synonym for witches, black magicians, and Babylonians. But they are separate people.
So what's going on? I mean, while all this is happening, what's going on in Assyria?
Well, Ashurdan II is the king, and he has taken up the ancient tradition to do yearly campaigns to honor Ashur, the god of war. Remember, Ashur is the one god, because every other god is sort of a side of Ashur, an aspect of Ashur, which is kind of weird, because Ashur cares only about war, but every other god, like the god of love, is just the piece of Ashur. So Assyrian religion is quite hard to understand. But Ashurdan has been campaigning to the north, northwest, and northeast. And today we'll probably shed some light on why he's going north all the time. But he has been training the army, building roads. He has been getting iron weapons. The Assyrians are now the best warriors in the world. And you could argue they've been the best warriors in the world for quite some time. But the threat is gone. Assyria fought for its survival since the fall of the Middle Assyrian Empire. But now they are expanding. And the enemies that stole the Assyrian territory or threatened the survival of the nation will now taste the steel of Ashur.
That god, he makes some demands on his people.
Please Google Ashur God of War, because he's so awesome. It's like this little bearded guy with wings with a bow. And he looks like armor, but more evil, definitely.
Crazy.
Yes.
Oh, I was going to ask. You're talking about, you said the enemies that once threatened Assyria. Who are the enemies?
This will make up the bulk of this episode, because we're now going to walk around Assyria's borders and look at all the people that are in for a bad time. Because they are all going to be the victims of the Assyrian Empire.
Oh, no.
To the northwest, in what is now Armenia and Turkey, Assyria is the northern Iraq today. And northwest of that is these mountains. The terrain changes completely. While northern Iraq is desert, pretty much, not quite, especially not in this time, it's much more fertile. But we have flat plains, and then suddenly you have giant mountains. And in these mountains, there are mountain peoples called the tribes of the Nairi. They have many names, but they are centered around a lake in Turkey, Lake Van. And this lake is huge, and it's also non-drinkable. And it's so salty that only really weird small fish can live in it. So it's a very hostile lake. But the area is still heavily populated and has a lot of iron ore and natural resources. And there have been tribal groups there since forever. It used to be, I think it was outside the Hittite Empire in the 13th century BC. But these tribes will now become the victims of the Assyrians all the time, because they are nearby, they have resources, they have gold, and they will eventually form into a nation to face the threat of the Assyrians. But for the next 50 years, they are just mercilessly beaten up. And then they will form their nation. It will be called Urartu. And then they will be mercilessly beat up for another 50 years before they can actually build mountain fortresses and keep the Assyrians out. One important thing about these Assyrian campaigns is that they are their main goal, their yearly campaigns, the main goal is to take people's stuff, either by scaring them or actually killing them. But it's robber campaigns at this point. So their main goal is not conquest. But so conquest will happen by accident at first, unless it is the area that it was part of the Middle Assyrian Empire that they really want to reclaim. North of this area is the great steppes of Russia. And on these steppes are horse nomads, horse archers. And there are a lot of tribes, but there are two major groups of tribes. And they won't affect our story for some time. But they are the Cimmerians.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, they have nothing to do with Conan the Barbarian. And there are the Scythians. And especially the term the Scythians is used for different tribes. It's a very vague term. But the Cimmerians are more closely defined people. These people have a lot of horses. And horses sort of come down into the Middle East from the Russian steppes. And this will be very important for the Assyrians because the Assyrians don't have horses naturally on the plains. So they need to get their horses from somewhere. So that's also one of the main goals of the campaigns is just to get more horses. Because the Assyrians know that horses are good in warfare. But we need to get the horses from everywhere. So sometimes these campaigns are just horse raids pretty much. But the steppes is the great source of the horses. To the west of Assyria is Syria. This is quite confusing, Syria and Assyria. And it's, I just read something this week about the difference between Syrians and Assyrians. And it turned out that I was wrong, so I will not go into that too much. I might have said something wrong on the YouTube channel. But in this area in the north of Syria is the remnants of the Hittite Empire. This was the powerful empire that had the riddle of steel. They knew steel before anyone else did in the Middle East. But it fell in the Bronze Age collapse. And in the north of Syria, these these cities of the Hittite Empire, they survived and sort of pretend that the empire is still around. So they have the same art style. They build houses like they did in the empire. They call themselves empire names. And they have managed to assimilate the Arameans. Everywhere else, the Arameans are raiding everything, living in the countryside, causing chaos in Assyria and in Babylonia. Much like orcs, I imagine. But the new Hittites were like, oh, look at this marvelous art we have. We are the Hittites. We are really great. And the Arameans were, oh, that art is really sweet. We want to be like you. So the Arameans are... Not the Arameans in Assyria, because they are turning into Assyrians at this point. But the bulk of the Arameans in north of Syria, they are turning into Neo-Hittites. This is a very rich area, and the political units are very small. Every city is for itself. So this is like a smorgasbord of targets for Assyrian campaigns. You can, like, this year we go and burn down that city, and that year we go to that city. And they have problems uniting with each other. And eventually Damascus will rise as the greatest power in the West. But it will be an entirely Aramean kingdom because Arameans are realizing that they have to organize into nations to defend themselves against Assyrians. And Damascus will be the center of resistance to Assyria for a long time.
Is this the time when they were coming up with the Damascus steel blades?
I don't think so, but not sure. If somebody knows, please tell us.
Yeah. I'm very interested in sword making.
Oh.
I find it fascinating.
I think we will have plenty to talk about swords then. I'm not that good at swords and stuff. I'm usually not the totally fascinated by like military details in history, so I could need some work there. To the south of Assyria is Babylonia. So Babylonia is southern and it's focused on the ancient city of Babylon. And the Assyrians will have a very strange relationship with Babylon, which will eventually become their demise. Because Babylon is so old and so... The Assyrians are kind of the cousins from the countryside to Babylon. So every time they deal with Babylon, even if Babylon is really weak, they are like, oh, these guys are so great. And they will learn stuff. They are much like the Greeks and the Romans. So the Assyrians are the Romans learning from the superior Greek Babylonian culture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. I think it does.
And Babylon is extremely weak at this time. There are Arameans everywhere. The city dwellers, which are pretty much the same racial stock as the Assyrians, they live in the great cities, Babylon, Uruk, Borsippa. There are maybe 50-plus cities. But everything is a chaos. The trade routes have gone silent. They can't go anywhere. Now the Chaldeans have taken their nice swamps in the south. And so they have a lot of problems, but they will be treated with kid gloves some of the time by the Assyrians, or sometimes the Assyrians will be really mad at them and beat them up. But the Assyrian relationship with Babylon is like nothing else, because they have this respect for Babylonia.
Is that the only other culture that they seem to have any kind of...
Yes.
Respect for?
Yes, there are pretty much no racism at this time, so the Assyrians are willing to accept anyone if they obey them. So if they become vassals, or if they actually can want to become Assyrians, they are happy to do that. But they sort of consider their own culture superior to any other, except...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
For Babylon. And there is another ancient culture right east of Babylon who has lost its trading contact with Babylon. It's Elam in the south of Iran today. And Elam might even be much older than Babylonia or Assyria. It is older. But it is quite mysterious to us. And even though it's so old, the Assyrians just hate it. So if they come across Elam, they will just beat them up and they don't care about their culture at all. This country is really strange. I talked about it before on the show, but it has its own language. It has its own sort of racial origin for its people. We still know quite little about Elam, but Elam will become a major player in our story as well. And the fact that Elam is there in southern Iran is really good for civilization, actually, because there are hostile mountain tribes in the Zagros Mountains in Iran and in northern Iran that Elam is holding back. And if these tribes become too powerful, bad things will happen. And you might recognize the name of some of the tribes, because they are the Persians, the Medes, the Parthians, the Manians. And they are at this point very disorganized, and it's incredibly hard to tell which tribe has control over which tribe. But they are importing horses from the north, and they are actually at this point pretty good recruitment grounds for the Assyrians. So the Assyrians will take these horse nomads into their armies at this point. But yeah, you might have heard of the Persians, so they might come back to our story later.
I figured.
But they're not at all like what they will become. So let's go into some chronological narrative then.
Okay.
In 920 BC, Shamash-Mudamik, I love these names, becomes king of Babylon. And he's the successor to Marbiti-Idina. We talked about him before. We don't know where Shamash-Mudamik came from. This kingship of Babylon is supposed to be hereditary, but it almost never is. So if somebody actually managed to leave the kingship to their son, it's an exception. But Shamash-Mudamik appears to be a native Sumerian Babylonian guy, which means that the Assyrians will like him. Every source on this guy is from the Assyrians. So it means that it's probably a bad time to become the ruler of Babylon. But this guy will take the challenge quite well. We don't really know anything that happens between 920 and 913, but we can assume that Ashur-dan is still working on making Assyria ready for what is to come. He seems to be planning, and he is campaigning, but he's not going out taking back the Middle Assyrian Empire. It's rather he's setting the stage for his son to do this.
Okay.
Which is why Ashur-dan II is not normally counted as a king of the Neo-Assyrian Empire. But in 912 BC, he dies. The empire is the empire is usually counted as starting in 911 BC. So here is a gap of 1 year. And there might have been a civil war in Assyria. I talked before about how the Assyrians assign their next king. So the king will choose one of his sons to become the king. And that's, of course, a great way to get the sons to hate each other. So
fratricide.
Yes, yes. Fratricide will return. Will rear its ugly head again and again in Assyria. And there is a civil war, and one guy comes out on top. He's Adad-nirari II. He claims he is the eldest son and the legitimate successor of Ashur-dan II. And the sources also tell us there's a possible revolt among the vassals, but I don't get that, because who is a vassal to Assyria at this point? They haven't conquered anyone yet.
All right.
So I don't know what that means. But this guy, Adad-nirari II, he becomes the king of Assyria, and this is the point then in 911 BC when the empire is supposed to start. So there are different dates for this. Some people count it from Ashur-dan's start, and some people count it from Adad-nirari II's grandson, Ashur-nasir-pal II, who I will talk about at great length. But I think it's fair to count the empire from this point. I think Adad-nirari II does enough to be counted as a father of the empire. He will reign for 20 years, and he will do quite a bit of stuff. We also have this year, 911 BC, is the first really good dated point in history at all, because there is a celestial phenomena that we can date by astronomy today, and it's referred to from this year by the Assyrians. So we pretty much know that this actually happened in 911 BC, and it's the first event where you can safely say that this is the year, this is the exact year this happened.
What was it?
I can't remember, but it is some constellation or some comet or something like that,
An
eclipse. And now from this year, we have the eponym lists. It's a weird list that the Assyrians keep, where they say, in the eponym year of insert some important guy, the king did this. And in the first year of the reign, it's often in the year of Adad-nirari II, Adad-nirari went west, for example. But then in the next year, he takes like the second most important guy in Assyria and it's his eponym year. So from the eponym names, we get some information about other people than the king. But we must also remember that the sources, which now improved dramatically compared to what we have had before, they are war propaganda pretty much. So the Assyrians are happy to lie about everything. And you won't get an... the saddest thing they can say in these sources are the king stayed in the land. That probably means that everything went to hell and people invaded them. But that's sort of the worst thing you can hear. And often it's glorious victories and thousands of cities taken and everybody right. bowed down before the mighty king. And this will become much worse by the end of the empire. You get these enormous exaggerations of what people are doing. But Adad-nirari II is actually doing stuff then. So in 910 BC, he campaigns against the Arameans because they are the most severe problem right now. There are Aramean tribes very close to Assyria in the area of the Middle Assyrian Empire who definitely have... So he will go with his first campaign to the junction of the Kabur and the Euphrates. This is this will quickly become core Assyria territory, but it's not now. And he conquers this, these Arameans that live in this area. They were like the easy pickings. They were right next to Assyria, and you could just walk across the plain to get to them. They are deported. And this is a policy that is, in some sources, credited much later to the Assyrians. But Adad-nirari II actually deports people from one end of his small empire to the other. So the idea is to, okay, you caused problems there, but now you will have to face these other guys at the other side of the empire who are causing problems there, and they will not like you, so you will have to fight for the empire. And luckily, we will help you, so you are now an Assyrian. Congratulations.
Welcome aboard.
Yes, and this is what will happen to the lost tribes of Israel, for example, later.
Okay.
Now I mentioned the Bible, so I might go into detail about why the Assyrians are considered so evil. There is a synonym in the Bible for the Antichrist, and it's the Assyrian. Before the 19th century, we knew very little about them. We only had the records in the Bible. It turns out that the records in the Bible are much better than any record the Romans and the Greeks left us of the Assyrians. So never read anything the Romans or the Greeks said about the Assyrians, because they are just making stuff up. It's entirely crazy. There's almost nothing. They become correct about the last king, the last great king of the Assyrian Empire, the Greeks actually knew about. But before that, they are just... they're just making stuff up. It's crazy. So Julius Caesar refers to an Assyrian queen, for example. We'll talk more about her, Semiramis. She actually never existed at all. And there might be someone who sort of started a legend, but all the stuff about her is legendary. So the Greeks and the Romans didn't know anything, but the Bible will contain a lot of information about the Assyrians. And they are, of course, depicted as the villains in the Bible. They are... really, really bad. And actually, this is not entirely undeserved, because the Assyrians will maintain their empire with horrible methods. Really, really bad things will happen because of the Assyrians. And we'll talk more about that. But I think the important point here is that this is the first empire. There was an empire back in 2100, the Akkadian Empire, but that's remembered as a legend. But this empire, the Neo-Assyrian Empire, will be the start of all things empire in the Western world. And you will be amazed at how much of the Persian Empire and the Roman Empire that actually comes from the Assyrians. So the Persian and the Roman Empires are pretty much trying to do what the Assyrians did. And then they are improving some of the stuff, because the Assyrians will get some things wrong. But there is a lot of stuff that was invented by the Assyrians. Aqueducts, keys and locks, and a lot of things. We'll talk more about that. The Persians will change one thing that will make them more successful than the Assyrians in their time. They will remove the horrible atrocities from their repertoire. Or they will not actually, but they will make less massacres.
Oh, that would kind work of them.
Really good for the Persians.
Right.
So the Assyrians will, they believe that people are bad and that people will cheat if given the opportunity and that they must be punished. And Assyrian punishment is not something you want to be the victim of.
I can imagine not.
We will not talk about all the other places in the world this time. This is all about Assyria, because now their time begins. I did promise to talk about the Bantu expansion, which is not affected by the Assyrians. Because this is something that is happening in Africa. It begins in 1000 BC, and it actually coincides with the Nok culture in Nigeria. The Nok culture is poor for a podcast, because all we know about them is amazing art. It will go on until 300 AD. And the Bantu expansion then is a proto-Bantu language group, and they probably have agriculture. They are starting out from Nigeria and Cameroon, and they are spreading south into Africa. And this is really bad for the Khoisan that we talked about earlier. So today in Africa, most of Africa is occupied by the Bantu, and the Khoisan only survives in small areas. There will be iron, but it won't be in Africa until 400 BC, pretty much, if you count the Bantu area then, of course, and not Egypt. Tutankhamun himself already had an iron dagger in his tomb. There won't be a nation state of any significance in Africa, in southern Africa, until 1400 AD. So it's 2,400 years wow. in the future. That's the kingdom of Mutapa, or maybe Great Zimbabwe in 1000 AD. But that's a little word about Africa, because I wanted to say something, because we haven't said right. anything. But this is the Assyrian Empire. They will now spend 300 years beating people up.
Well, I can't wait to hear what happens on the next time. I guess the Assyrians are going to go to war and fight war for how long?
300 years.
300 years of fighting.
300 years wow. of ultra-violence.
Sounds like it'll be quite exciting.
And the first, all right. the first well, one will be like the last. It will be against Babylonia.
Oh, those poor Babylonians.
Yes, but
they're just sitting there trying to keep their civilization going.
Yes.
All right. Well, folks, that brings us to the end of this episode. If you did enjoy it, please consider our Patreon. Just head over to patreon.com/fanofhistory. Or is it the fan of history?
It's fan of history.
Fan of history. All together. Go to Patreon and you can pledge there. And it would really help us out. Also, please go to YouTube and subscribe to the Fan of History channel. Like and share it. Since this is on iTunes, we'd really appreciate if you could give us a review on iTunes. Again, thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.